Greetings, brethren and sisters, Adam, and our kids. Yes, my great pleasure to be with you once again. Last time I was here was exactly a year ago, after the Taupo Bible School. I think it must have been about 20 years ago that I first came to the Bay of Plenty Ecclesia, and Mum and Dad moved down. And there's not so many of the originals left, but that's all right. So I bring with me the love and the greetings from the brethren in Southland, but especially the brethren in Riverton. So this morning, I'm going to look at a few thoughts, well, one in particular thought from Paul in his letter to the Philippians. So Paul gives some very good advice to live in a way pleasing to God. And so for my words of encouragement to you today, we'll be looking at Philippians, or an idea in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, if you want to turn that up. So that reads, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are noble, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." And the phrase I want to focus on today is whatsoever things are of good report. Before we go any further, I'm going to fess up and say that for the past 3 years I have been reading a book. Like, I don't read too many books, but it's a book by Colin Attridge on Think on These Things, and this exhort is based quite a lot off his words. So please listen to a story about how we perceive things. On the face of this verse, Philippians 4 verse 8, it's talking about filtering and only thinking about those things that are good. Is this self-deception? Just for a minute, let's pretend that everyone is good all the time. It sounds like Paul is telling us to be like the three wise monkeys who hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil. And up to a point, that is what he is telling us. The positive thinker's character in Philippians 4 verse 8 is very much about choosing our thoughts and attitudes, but not at the expense of reality. What Paul tells us to do, in fact, is to choose a better reality. But how can anyone do that? Surely there's only one reality, and we're stuck in it, like it or not. Well, no, I don't think that's the case, because we're always filtering, and we hear what we hear and read and see. We make sense of the world in a way that makes sense to us. And so many things we take in are slanted in some way, usually for the negative. For instance, the weather report will say partly cloudy with 20% chance of rain, which sounds pretty depressing until you figure out that what it really means is mostly clear with 80% chance of sunshine, which for a moment there you were looking for your umbrella. Well, I know, eh? But how can anyone do that? Surely there's only one reality. So to think positively about other people, things and situations is to choose a version of reality that is every bit as valid as the downbeat version, and to concentrate on things that are of good report. So to concentrate on things of good report, it has the Bible backing. It doesn't require us to wear a pair of rose-coloured glasses through which you never see anything wrong with anyone or anything. That would be self-deception. Looking for the good in people and situations is not deceiving yourself about them, but putting the emphasis where it belongs. Human nature has the bias towards the negative aspect of life, and some effort has to be made to overcome that. We are not naturally positive. Well, I know I'm not naturally positive. have to put quite a lot of effort in. There is a curious pleasure to be had when we hear that a problem has happened to someone, and even more pleasure when we tell others the dreadful news. Whatsoever things are of bad report, how easily and naturally we tend to think on those things. As believers, we have to retune our minds to this different way of thinking, looking for the good. But it's difficult because we have to overcome years of wrong tuning. We're like a radio with one preset channel, and our reflex is to go back to that one that we know about without even realizing it. We live in a predominantly negative environment. Much of what we hear all day and every day from those around us, and from the media especially, is not good report. We have to learn to reinterpret a lot of it, to look for the silver lining. So, an aeroplane crashes and the headline for the day is 27 killed. But why not 120 survived? The news industry thrives on bad news, or slanting the good news in a bad direction. I do appreciate it when there's a traffic report and they tell you just the small list of roads that you want to avoid rather than the thousands of roads that are all good, but that's a wee bit different. So there have been news broadcasting companies that have tried to put the positive slant on news, and they've all gone out of business because no one wants to hear their news. They all want to hear the bad things that are happening. So you can't really blame the media for more focusing on the negative things. But Paul urges us to fly in the face of that and to think on things that are of good report. So Paul advises us, or rather the Spirit through Paul advises us, to think upon whatsoever things are of good report. This means especially things about people, but it's well worth extending it to cover as much as possible in our lives. To choose, where possible, to think on the better and more scriptural version of reality. The best good report I know of is the good news, the gospel itself. God's plan of salvation through Jesus Christ is great news. In fact, there is no greater news. We need to view life through the lens of the Spirit, making God's truth impact how we see life. But does the old thinking of flesh interfere even here and make us feel negative sometimes about God's good news? We are capable of making a bleak side to the gospel. Accountability. There's a word to stop you in your tracks. Maybe, or what about responsibility? Let's just throw in judgment and the concept of unforgivable sin. Is there a chance that I might commit one? What about the severity of God? All the weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then there's our lack of spiritual progress to consider, along with the possibility that we might have the wrong gospel. What about the readings we miss or times we forget to pray? Oh, and the failure to be good examples to others. Or sometimes our failure to acknowledge our Christianity. Does the good news ever seem like the bad news to you? Does the good news make you feel bad? And then you think, then you feel bad about feeling bad. Because you know the truth is supposed to make you feel happy. The reason for all this, of course, is that the knowledge of the gospel brings heightened awareness of our shortcomings. If the gospel hits us where it's supposed to, it awakens us to our inadequacies. We now have a certain standard to meet. Paul argues in his letter to the Romans that the introduction of the law through Moses had what might be thought of as a negative effect, while heightening the awareness of failure. Romans 3 verse 20, may as well turn that one up. For by the law is knowledge of sin. That's the last last part of the verse there. For by law is knowledge of sin. And Romans 5 verse 20 says something similar. Moreover, the law entered that offence might abound. But the psalmist could still say in Psalm 119, oh, how love I the law. Again, it was a matter of how they saw the law. It was either a burden or a delight. The same law, but a different reality. We have to make the same choice about the gospel of the kingdom. We have to make the right and positive choice to complete the words of Paul in Romans 5 verse 20. Moreover, the law entered that offence might abound, but where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. The gospel is good news, and we should never allow it to become bad news for us. Our inadequacies are more than met by the adequacy of Christ. That's the essence of the good news. God called you and me with the idea of showing us his goodness, not his severity. The gospel is essentially a gospel of grace. That's why it's good news. Paul said that the ministry he was charged with by Jesus himself was to testify to the good news of God's grace. That's in Acts 20. The good news is that God wants to save us because we are sinful, far more than he wants to condemn us because we are sinful. I have an example from the story of Jonah. Try and see yourself in the story for a little bit. So God has a message for the people of Nineveh, and Jonah had interpreted that message as 40 days until the destruction of the city. When the people heard this, did they fall into despair and say, what is me for those 40 days? No, they didn't. They saw another option. They knew the message was from God, and so they did something about it and repented. God, in his love for us, has also given us warnings, and we can see the warnings as good and change, or as bad and just get all depressed about it. This is what Jesus said about the Ninevites in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, verse 41. The men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and indeed a greater than Jonah is here. God recognized their change in life. I have one more example, and for this one we need to do a bit of traveling. Way back to when Israel left Egypt. And 12 spies. Spy out the promised land. You know where I'm going with this one. Numbers 13. Let's go there. Numbers 13, we'll start at verse 25. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of Jordan. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go at once and take possession, for we are able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. From reading this report, you'd almost think that they went to different lands. We know the story of Joshua and Caleb, how they were encouraged by what they saw and by what God could do. But no, they went to the same land. But Joshua and Caleb, they saw through faith rather than through fear. And we know what happens next. The nation of Israel chooses to believe the bad news and said stuff like Numbers chapter 2, 14 verse 2. At the end there. If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. And so God turned their negativity into a reality. They didn't get to inherit the promised land. Instead it was their children, who through the leadership of Joshua crossed over. Even today we have giants and tall walls in our lives. Our God is much bigger than any giant and much stronger than any tall wall. We have our promised land over the horizon, and our leader Jesus shows us the way to overcome. This morning we have looked at the phrase, whatsoever things are of good report. Do we think on these things? We have the chance of a better reality. Do we live in a positive or negative reality? You choose, I can't choose for you. Even today, positive faith is a huge advantage. Negativity can still be a barrier to our promised land. Negativity will stunt your faith. If you can transfer the story of the 12 spies to your own life and make a story about what is happening in your life, how many good reports? How many bad reports? You'll quickly realize that you should ignore those pessimistic voices in the back of your head, saying that God's way is too hard. Ignore those promptings that suggest you're not up to it, and listen to the voice of optimism, to this small voice of faith that is easily drowned out. This voice says, I may not be up to it, but with God's help, I can overcome any obstacle, all the giants of self-doubt, of failure and of weakness. I can enter the promised land. As we come to the emblems, we remember our Lord and Master Jesus and his life of perfection. After the Last Supper, Jesus spent the night in prayer to his Father to prepare his mind for the following day. In Hebrews 12 verse 2, we see Jesus' perspective, which reads, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and he is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus filled his mind with joy. He knew that through this sacrifice, everyone had the chance of salvation. Jesus is the perfect example. He knew God's plan and made it his reality. Is God's plan your reality?